And welcome to another episode of the Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today we have one of the most talented people that we've had on this show. I can just simply say ever. This is going to be an amazing episode, but none other than Alex Stapleton. How are you doing today?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me.
For sure. And my show is unique because we start each one of our shows with the same question for each guest, which is we like our guests to walk us through the arc of their careers. And you've been a director, producer, documentarian, and showrunner. How did you get into this work? And walk us through each one of your career stops along the way.
It all started leaving Texas at 18 years old after graduating from high school. I couldn't wait to get out of the state and move to New York. And in New York, it was like the independent film era. So, you know, this was over 20 years ago. And I knew that I wanted to be a director, but there weren't a lot of female directors. There weren't a lot of Black female directors at that time. This is like 1998. And so I just basically started from the bottom. I interned, then I was an assistant, always working in film and so many different production companies. I like to say that I work for everybody by this point. And I just worked my way up from the bottom. You know, filmmaking is a craft and it's one of the last kind of like apprenticeships, I guess you could say. I didn't go to film school. I didn't finish college. I had a very, very, crazy work ethic. And then I fell into documentaries because getting into scripted again in that era was really difficult. There were some women that did it and, you know, some Black women that had those opportunities. But I produced my first, doc, just out of luck. Cause I could secure an interview with Damon Dash. This was like 2004. It was a film called, Just for Kicks. And, it premiered at the first Tribeca Film Festival ever. And that's where I caught the documentary bug and where I realized, oh, wow, I can make documentary stories about my culture and, you know, things that are not necessarily what Kim Burns would do. And there's a whole world for that. And so I've been at it ever since.
Let's hone in on that real quick, because there are a lot of producers and there are a lot of people, especially now, everybody's a content creator. My wife is walking around Instagramming everything we do because she's creating content as well. But not everyone chooses the format that you have as a vehicle. Like everybody doesn't choose documentaries as a vehicle for their storytelling. Why documentaries? And what is it about that format that keeps you doing what you're doing?
That's a really good question. And sometimes I have to ask myself that.
And I also know there's not a whole bunch of money in documentaries either.
No, there's not. You know, I think it started because when I started, documentaries were not, you know, there was no Netflix. There was no real distribution besides like, you know, the old school going to the theater to see a documentary. It was a much smaller industry. And I think what I loved was just the freedom that I had. And I was in my 20s. And as, you know, a woman, once I kind of learned how to produce them, and then I started to direct, I liked that I could have an idea and I could go and make it. You know, my first one that I directed was called Corman's World, about a B-movie king and who discovered everybody, you know, from, you know, Jonathan Demme to Jack Nicholson to Ron Howard to Francis Ford Coppola, to Robert De Niro, to Scorsese. And making that film, I was obsessed with this guy. And I, you know, I was like, who is this man? And I like cold called him. And then 5 years later, the film was at Sundance. And then it was at the Cannes Film Festival. And, you know, along the way, I met all my film gods and icons and was able to sit down with them. And it was like a film school. And I feel like with docs, whatever you choose to do, if you can get the resources to set it up, it becomes like this ecosystem and this like learning tree that you get, you know, totally embedded with the subject, and they take a while to make. And so you just, you know, it kind of is like getting a master's degree in so many different subjects, and it's addicting, to say the least. And so, you know, I think that for me, the one thing that I do to survive creatively is I don't want to be pigeonholed. I won't allow anyone to pigeonhole me that, oh, she only does this or she only does that. So I've managed to spread, you know, the storytelling in different buckets, I guess you could say. So sports, social justice, film, pop culture, music, you know, I've done a myriad of different things. And so I like, now I like kind of combining those worlds and not being so on the nose and, you know, like, let's do a sports story, but sports, music, social justice, you know, like, how do I find the unicorn in many different worlds? That's kind of what's exciting for me now.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Before we get into God Save Texas, tell me, I have a question for you. So tell me about the documentary that you'd love to do that you haven't done yet.
Wow. That is also a very, I don't think there's one, to be honest with you. There's not one. There's too many to like narrow it down. I moved back home. I moved back down south. I'm from Houston. I moved back to Texas. And right now the what I'm jonesing for and what I like, what I'm so excited to do is to tell stories, Southern stories, especially on the Gulf Coast. I'm just mining for, you know, these stories of, especially with, you know, with Black folks down here. We have so much rich history and so much of it has never, ever been shared. Or we get like one part of the story, right? But like, not the full context of everything else that was going on. So I have like way too many that I want to do to be able to pinpoint to one. So yeah.
I got you. All right. God Saves Texas, or God Save Texas. Excuse me. It's more of a plea than a
prayer.
It's a prayer. It's not a past tense action item. Let's talk about God Save Texas. What is it about and why did you decide to do this project?
So God Save Texas is inspired by the book with the same name written by Lawrence Wright. And it was, he named it, it was a prayer. That's a literal thing. His editor at the New Yorker was like, can you write something to explain Texas to the rest of the country? Because nobody understands it. And so that article turned into his book, and the book is semi-autobiographical and really takes a look at the state and tries to break down, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly of Texas. I read it. I was a Texan in exile for over 20 years. I lived in New York, and then I was in L.A. And I read it when I was in L.A., and I was like, oh, God, this guy, you know, could not be further away from like my experience of Texas, but he nailed this like crazy relationship that I think we have as Texans with our identity. It's, you know, you both love it and hate it. And I think that, yeah. So I just fell in love with the book. And then Alex Gibney, who's an amazing documentarian, his company approached me, introduced me to Larry. They said they were looking for three Texan filmmakers. Rick Linklater had already done his episode, and he's a very, you know, established, amazing feature film director who basically put Austin on the map, you know, in my opinion, for the film scene. And they're like, okay, so we're trying to find two more people. And I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, I can be in this series with Rick Linklater. I mean, it was just a dream come true. And so I met with Larry. He knew I was from Houston. He really wanted to tell an oil story. And that's how we jumped in. But the story we started with, this is another great thing about documentaries. You write it as you go, and the plans can change. So in the beginning, what Larry and I were trying to do was to really explain and unpack the process of how oil and gas works so that people, you know, can understand what that looks like. But what it turned into was a story about my family, seventh generation, Black Houstonian. My ancestors were enslaved in Galveston and came here. And it really became the story of my Texas, which is a Black Texas, and really the omission and the erasure that we have not had. And you know, we have not really been a part of the oil boom in the state. And so, you know, that's what the story morphed into.
So I know projects are like children, so I won't ask if this is your favorite one to date, but what's different about this project compared to other ones you've done?
I've never done anything like it because I was in it and it was focused on my family. And so I've spent, you know, over 20 years, meeting with subjects and mining their lives and their stories and trying to figure out like, how do I get in and, you know, tell this story in an interesting way. And that's kind of, you know, I guess a part of the craft that I feel like I've worked really hard to try to do. And so this one was crazy because, it was just this whole crazy cathartic experience of like knowing some of my history through my mother. My mother, you know, does all the genealogy of our family and has been doing it for 30 plus years. And, she would, you know, she tells me stuff or she would tell me things, but I don't think I ever really processed it until I was doing this movie and really started to understand the lack of all the history I didn't know, you know, and all the history I was taught in school here in Texas, that was completely, you know, just completely deleted, you know, huge chunks of like reality of like what really happened, including like slavery, you know, like that our state had
small
little thing, you know, that maybe they would want to talk about that, you know, when we fought Mexico, it wasn't because all these white men were like, we see a beautiful Texas where we're liberating all and we want freedom for all. They were fighting to keep their slaves. And that was, I felt embarrassed that I didn't really understand that. I felt embarrassed that like, I hadn't put the pieces together of like what that meant for my family. And then I was outraged. And now I'm just excited to try to, you know, continue to work on pieces like this so that we can, you know, we can share our legacy and make sure that the powers that be that are controlling Texas right now, that we put an end to what they're doing, which is all creating an alternate history.
It's kind of unique that you're using your art to hold the powers that be accountable. And it's amazing how you can utilize that and do that through art. What makes Texas so different, though? It seems like Texas is so between this and Beyonce, between Alex and Beyonce, right? Texas.
Oh, please. Don't even put us in the same sentence.
No, that's what it is. That's I'm calling it. Those two have put Texas out there in the forefront. But what makes Texas so unique other than its just fucking view is huge, it's vast? What's its uniqueness? Or is that a part of it?
It's a really interesting state. I mean, it's unique in many different ways. I mean, you know, just geographically, it's very unique. It is almost like a country. It's huge, you know. There's so many different worlds, you know, within Texas. You've got West Texas, like Permian, you know, basin, desert. You've got, you know, and each area has its own issues and its own kind of like, you know, political climate, demographics, culture. You've got, you know, places like El Paso in West Texas. Ileana Sosa directed one of the films in the trilogy. She's from El Paso and it's about her hometown. Then you've got, you know, North Texas, which I can't really say I know too much about. You know, it's the
showing your Houston colors in Texas.
You know, there's just Houston. No,
Houston, maybe Dallas, and a little bit of
Austin. Dallas. Yeah, you know, we got the San Francisco, LA thing is like Houston, Dallas. Dallas is so different. And East, there's all of East Texas, and then there's Houston. And I feel like our culture is we're probably more embedded with like Gulf Coast culture. You know, there's a lot of Creoles.
That's all New Orleans. I attend.
Yeah, it's. there's a lot of, you know, a lot of the Black folks that are here came from, you know, country towns in Louisiana, you know, after the war, after World War II, to look for better jobs and you know, work. So it's this like crazy bed of just, you know, intersectionality. And then today I feel like, you know, it's a place that is full of, you know, so many different immigrants from around the world. Houston, I believe, is about to outshine New York as far as diversity is concerned. Oh, wow. We are one of the most diverse cities, you know, in the country. And I think that's amazing. It's also very unique in that, you know, you have a population that is pretty, I'm not going to say everyone is progressive, but I think that we all kind of know how to coexist and get along despite what, you know, is put in the news about us. But it's also, you know, on the flip side, it's very much, it's gerrymandered, and, you know, it's a blueprint of like how to control people in a bad way. It's a blueprint of how to get away with, like, you know, not having, not giving people rights. Like in Houston, we have no zoning, which is crazy.
Trust me, you can have a $1 billion condominium, like a liquor store, strip club, and then like a mall. That's what happens when libertarianism runs amok. It's insane.
It's insane. It is totally insane. And there's so many people moving here. You know, by 2050, I think that our population is supposed to outdo California and New York combined.
Let me ask you a question about Houston real quick, though, because going back to your documentary directly, Houston is in the heart of one of the energy capitals of the world. But you pose the question of what it's meant for Black folk to live there. What has it meant, both in terms of wealth creation, but also in terms of the environmental injustices that come with the proximity to fossil fuels or that fossil fuel industry?
That's like the big heart of the documentary, and showing that, you know, look, Spindletop happened at the turn of the century, and that whole period of, you know, of these wildcatters coming and all these men, capitalizing on, you know, oil, the big oil booms, those were all white men. And most of them were not, you know, even necessarily from the state. They came in, it was a gold rush. And they created empires. And then, you know, by the 1950s, 1960s, 70s, as, you know, oil and gas, the industry, we saw more plants and refineries, you know, being built and, you know, oil and gas being used for other things. Those factory jobs were also pretty much all white men. They used to be union jobs. So there was, you know, you would have to get like kind of, you were lucky to get that type of work, and Black people were not a part of that story and that history until, you know, really more recent. We have been able to get jobs, but kind of on the outside of everything, and non-union jobs and temporary work and stuff that's really, really, really dangerous to do. On the flip side, from an environmental standpoint, there's a ton of historical Black communities, not just in Houston, but all over the Gulf, you know, coast of Texas, that have been here for decades. And oil and gas, because there's no zoning, there's no really any oversight, they get to kind of do whatever they really want to do. They've managed to exploit these properties and this land and this area, and really turn it into, like, you know, our country's largest petrochemical complex, and the second only to like what we see in the Middle East. So in Houston, that's a direct result of the ship channel and how, you know, oil and gas are moved in and out. And so my family, you know, were a part of the first Black master plan community in the US that was built in the late 40s. And it was called Pleasantville. And they were able to get out of Fifth Ward, which, you know, was a really big deal. And they could own their own homes and have mortgages and kind of, you know, quote unquote, get that piece of the American dream. And, you know, that only lasted for a few decades. And then oil and gas just moved in. And so now when you go to Pleasantville, you know, you'll see in the film, we took like these drone shots. It's like there's a neighborhood and it's completely surrounded by tanks and and refineries and just, you know, the industry. And you're not even allowed to know what they're storing. You're not even really allowed to figure out like, well, what are the chemicals that are like right next door to me? Because of, you know, after 9/11, the state of Texas decided that handing out that information would actually potentially help terrorists. So you don't get to know what you're living next to. So it's just all kinds of crazy. And I only bring up the jobs part of this because I think that's a big part of the in the culture here. It's like, well, you know, people kind of push on Black folks and brown and Black people here, because it happens in Latino communities as well. You know, just let it be there because industry creates jobs, industry creates wealth. And I wanted to talk about the jobs in the film because it's like, no, you don't get to say that anymore. It's basically just gaslighting, you know, it's total gaslighting. Like, we don't get those jobs. So I'm not saying that like, oh, if you gave us the jobs, everything would be okay and we would be very happy. It's just, you know, you don't get to use that excuse with us. And I hope that that people here start realizing, you know, we can bite that hand, you know, the you don't bite the hand that feeds you. It's like, no, we can, you know, because it's feeding us toxic chemicals that are destroying us and our families.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
So let me ask you just a couple more questions. Tell everybody when this, because I know it's out already, but tell people where they can find God Save Texas. This is something that you need to pull up with your children and you and your wife, and y'all can talk about it all night and day. So tell people how they can watch this.
You can watch The Price of Oil as well as the other two films in the series on Max. It is streaming now.
There you go. Now, important question about this, and then I have one more important question before I let you go. But how did this? And I'm intrigued by people who write books and who do documentaries. And I ask them this question, but how did this project change you, if at all?
Oh, I mean, massively. I mean, I never thought I would move back to Texas and I'm home now. I actually
just to run you out of Texas now, just so you know.
Don't say that. No, it is actually like a real thing. My mom is like, we got to put you in a apartment complex. You are too vulnerable. like you are out in this house. And no, it's yes, that is true. But I mean, I left because I never wanted to come back. And now I can't imagine a life not being here. I feel like my whole career has basically prepared me and groomed me to be able to do this next chapter of life and of my, you know, my craft and my art. to be able to plug in, you know, the resource, everything I've learned and all the people that I know, to tell more stories, you know, like this in this vein. And I think a film like this coming out this year, because I finished it in 2021. So it was shot quite a while ago. It took a while for the project to get finished. Yeah. And to come out, I shot it during COVID. So I think it's a blessing in a way. I was very anxious, like, why, you know, when is it going to come out? When is it going to come out? But I'm so grateful that it's out in an election year. And I think, you know, what it's done for me is realize that, you know, our history, our past, it's not that we need to live in the pain of all of it, but it's really like this film that I have been able to give back to my family and to my community to say, like, you know, let us get strength from like what we didn't know from our past, and realize that, you know, we do have the power to fight back. You know, today's a really interesting day because the Supreme Court decision just came out, and I feel like everyone keeps thinking that democracy is going to be saved by someone else. And I think what I have learned in making this film and in being a part of this trilogy is that it is on us to galvanize and to save ourselves. And I think, you know, this trilogy, this all of it, all of these issues, you know, about the border, prison, the prison industrial complex here, and environmental racism in the oil and gas industry, and our dependence on it. These are all massive. They're so complicated, and there's so much that has been done to make it a system, you know, where it feels overwhelming to fight. And I feel like what I've gotten from making this film is I've kind of found like this new community alongside with my family to fight back, and you know, the courage and the strength that like, we really don't have to take this anymore. But what it's going to take, the one common denominator with all of it, is voting. You know, we have to vote. We have to exercise our right. I know that that's said over and over again by so many different people, but I really think in this state, in this year, right now, tomorrow, it's just imperative that we really, you know, take it seriously. So I'm here, I'm home. I'm trying to use the storytelling that I can.
You're trying to change the world using your art. You can run away from that, but you're trying to change the world using your art. You deserve it. Last question for you. While everybody goes and watches this, these amazing documentaries on Max, I heard you got another little project coming out. Tell me what you can tell me about that project. I don't want you to divulge too much because I've had somebody nearly get fired from a movie on the Bakari Sellers podcast from talking too much. So tell me about your next project and tell me what you can say about it.
Well, I can share a bit about it. It's called How Music Got Free. That's my next film. It is about music piracy. Everyone knows the Napster story, but like no one understands the kids and the people that were taking down the music industry by proving that MP3 technology worked. And Patient Zero, the main dude who really created, he is the reason that like Steve Jobs was able to sell iPods and that Spotify exists and that Netflix exists. Who created like the idea of a playlist, is a man named Del Glover, who is a factory worker in Shelby, North Carolina, a Black man who never went to college, is a tech genius, and worked a factory job by day and by night was a pirate.
I remember LimeWire. I don't want to tell y'all how I remember it, but I do remember LimeWire.
We all partook.
They're not going to knock on your door. They're not going to knock on my door. Alex Stapleton, I want you to say that not only is she putting Texas on the map like our girl Beyonce, but she's always going to be she's also going to be at South by Southwest with none other than Meghan Markle. I mean, you're just hanging out with all the big wigs doing all the amazing things. Thank you so much for spending some time and joining the Bakari Sellers podcast.
Thank you for having me.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.